Welcome to the Hardware Asylum Podcast Extras. In this episode, Darren gives us his take on Battlefield's Firestorm. We talk Far Cry 5 and Borderlands 3. I'm your host, Dennis Garcia. With me today, I have Darren McCain.
Dennis, you know I play a lot of Battlefield 5. It's kind of become my go-to game. Well, just Battlefield in general.
Yeah.
Well, I saw a kind of a fun post on Reddit that I thought might be fun to talk about because it kind of name checks a lot of what's going on in Battlefield 5, and there's new stuff in Battlefield 5.
So Battlefield 5.
So I want to give credit where credit is due. This was posted by Sarcastic Matt. Well, by the time you hear this, it'll be over a month old, and we'll link to it in the show notes. Mm-hmm. But this is just a short letter. Day 118, no sign of any other allies. Everyone has been promoted to colonel. They refuse to promote anyone higher. They tell us soon, but they will just paint our guns different colors and hand us ski masks to distract us. War has focused on personal achievements. I feel all hope is lost.
I think it is.
It is.
It's all lost.
No, that's pretty funny, but there has been a lot of changes to Battlefield, but this addresses some of the complaints in, I think, kind of a funny way. So I wanted to kind of just bring that up and talk about what's been going on in Battlefield and some of the new stuff. Well, first of all, to address some of the things in that letter, it is true. They have not given us the ability to advance past level 50, which is colonel in the game. Now, this was true with some of the other Battlefield titles too, and eventually they released the ability for you to get up there way into 5-star general land, and it ended up being like, I don't know, level 110 or 115 or something. And as all levels go, it was a relatively high promotion. And to be fair, in Battlefield games, the rank really is nothing more than a score.
Oh, yeah. It determines how long you've played, right?
Yeah, that is true.
And maybe people have advanced to colonel or level 50 faster than they'd expected.
Well, that's true. So I wanted to tie this into some of the developments. And the way that they have been addressing this is kind of, I don't know, maybe different, maybe controversial. They've released a system called Tides of War. Now, this has been over the last couple of passes. So what Tides of War is, it gives you the ability to rank up in like a theme, right? So they'll release a new map and they'll release a Tides of War series that goes with it. So you'll have 2 or 3 weeks to unlock these different achievements, and they're tied to appearance stuff, as the letter mentioned. Ski masks and weapon skins for the various parts of your weapons are unlocked as you earn experience in that. So 20 levels or 40 levels, and we're in the second, or by the time you hear this, maybe even third set of Tides of War missions to get unlocks. Now, the good news is that this gives you the opportunity to get lots of cool appearance and weapon skins, if that's what you're into, much easier than maybe some of the harder unlocks that were released with the original game, because you can get these with time served. The more you play during that Tides of War, the more likely you are to get them.
So before you go too far,
okay,
can you get the ski mask with the skull face on it then?
Oh, you know, not yet, but there is one that has the Union Jack on it this time around, which is kind of cool.
That's cool.
And some kind of neat stuff that's not just all camo for a change.
Oh. Well, the skull face, that's from Call of Duty, so I was wondering if that was even going to make it.
You know, they haven't quite gotten out of the military theme. Now, we expected from the early previews of Battlefield 5 that they would eventually start releasing, you know, leather jackets with symbols on the back, like motorcycle jackets and clowns and stuff. And we saw this. Remember the early artwork?
Yeah, the clown.
And they haven't gone that route yet. But they're kind of getting there. Well, and as a second example, they have released a bunch of new content, which included some new grand operations, and those are the multi-day stages, and a couple of new maps, which, some are better than others, like always with Battlefield maps, but at least the content has been coming. And some of this addresses one of the original complaints, which was if you bought the premium edition, that you didn't get a lot of extra content, and you weren't getting the extra skins, what they called supply drops. And even to this day, I would tell you that if you're buying Battlefield 5, you should not buy the premium edition. It's a freaking waste of money. And they kind of milked us experts. All we got out of it was alpha beta play. And since that's over, there's no value there if you're buying it today. But there is another reason to purchase Battlefield 5 that's worth mentioning. And it just came out this month. And it's a game mode that's called Firestorm.
Firestorm.
Yeah, that's kind of a cool name. Firestorm, right? So what is Firestorm? Well, this is what every Battlefield 5 fan has been clamoring for.
Fire. They want fire.
No, it's a King of the Hill mode.
King of the Hill.
Did that sound sarcastic? Because it was.
King of the Hill. That's like Capture the Flag then?
Yeah. So basically what Battlefield 5 released is a King of the Hill mode to compete with Apex Legends and PUBG and Fortnite. Because those are, of course, the hot, popular King of the Hill titles.
Battle Royale.
Who knew? Yeah. Okay, so maybe I'm not super excited about it, but it is kind of a cool feature, and it might attract people to the Battlefield 5 Enterprise.
Yeah.
So some cool things about it that are different. So let's talk about those a little bit. What makes Firestorm different from Fortnite and Apex Legends and whatever, right?
Fire.
And even really basic Battlefield 5. Well, the first thing is the map is freaking huge.
Huge. And fire.
And surrounded by fire. So,
fire. Fire.
So there's a ring of fire. Johnny Cash does not get credit there.
Oh.
That goes around the map, and it shrinks at a much faster rate than I'm used to from Fortnite or PUBG. I haven't tried Apex Legends, but it's very visible all the time. It's a cool effect around the map, maybe even better with ray tracing.
Oh, yeah. So if the map is huge, though, that would explain why it moves faster.
Yeah, I think so, too. So I'm told the map is about 10 times the size of a regular Battlefield map.
Holy cow.
And you are parachuting into this just like in every other King of the Hill game, it seems like. You don't have to tip the bus driver in this one, apparently. But you do come in, and the modes are solo and squads of four, just like in the regular game. There's no 50-50s or some of the other game modes in the more mature titles out there, but I imagine they will come.
Well, yeah, obviously.
You drop out of the airplane, everyone together, AU loot, and that's where things start to get very different from Battlefield, as if King of the Hill wasn't different enough, in that you don't start with any weapons. Now, you can still spawn as your classes.
Well, that's the typical Battle Royale, don't have anything.
But very unlike Battlefield, you get a knife, yay, and you don't even have a sidearm. So you drop, you can, as I mentioned, spawn your classes, which is interesting because that means that you can actually apply your unlocks or your missions or your weapon experience levels, for those of you that aren't familiar with Battlefield 5, that unlock other things.
Right.
By playing in this mode, which is kind of interesting, but it requires you to do the old loot and scoot like in all the other games. Now, PUBG is the one that I have the most experience in. So you land, you hit the farmhouses or open fields, and you find weapons and ammo and armor and gear.
And hopefully people.
So the most interesting thing is, in an effort to address the time to kill or time to death that is sometimes the big complaint about Battlefield 5, although it has gotten a lot better since release, they have given you the ability to wear a vest. And the vest is something that you find. You start with a basic one, and it has armor slots in it. And your armor slots have rarity levels. So, and that's true of all equipment, and this is new to Battlefield experience. So when you pick up a gun, it might be a level 1, 2, 3, or I think they even go higher than that. Although, to be fair, I've never seen anything past a level 3 or a purple level. So when you get a level 1 weapon, the common, it's iron sights, small clip, slow to reload, maybe has a slower rate of fire. If you get a level 2, you'll get some add-ons that I haven't quite figured the pattern out, but it's usually basic sights, a little bit longer clip, normal fire rate. To me, it's the most like a gun in regular Battlefield 5. And then if you find a level 3, you get kind of a tricked out weapon. You might have a better scope, faster reload time, much longer clip, among other things. And I think they've also tweaked the accuracy as it goes up, which is kind of hard to tell. But I think that I feel a difference with weapons that I'm very familiar with in Firestorm.
Interesting.
So you can have up to 150 points worth of armor, which means that if you come across a player that has better than armor than you, they have a much harder time to die or TTD rate than you do. So it is very possible for you to have the exact same gun and still lose a firefight if they found better armor or have more ammo or any number of things, which introduces the RNG element.
Yeah. RNG, the bane of everyone's looter and shooter.
Yeah, and there are some other things that you can find, like flare guns that call in arty strikes and the like. But probably the other thing that's going to attract people that aren't already Battlefield 5 players to Firestorm for their King of the Hill mode is Battlefield. Well, it's a Battlefield game, right? So you have massively destructive environments, including the buildings, and vehicles, Dennis. Tanks, airplanes, cars. You can even ride a tractor. You can carry anti-aircraft and anti-tank guns, the six-pounders around behind you. It's interesting. There are bunkers that appear on the map, and I think that they're random, but I haven't quite gotten the pattern to it. I guess over time you will learn where these are because they'll become hot firefight spots on the map. Mm-hmm. But it takes two doors to open this. So two players at the same time or one player in sequence to open the doors. And it's not fast. And it makes a huge alarm noise, letting anyone within earshot know someone is trying to open this door to the bunker and release a vehicle.
Right.
The vehicles are randomly generated from the pool of tanks, and it's a pretty deep pool of tanks right now in the game, so some better than others. And it's a distinctive advantage, a very distinctive advantage to have a vehicle because you have armor, you have long-range guns. So to counter that, unlike regular Battlefield 5, you have limited ammo in the tank and limited fuel.
Well, you had limited fuel in Battlefield. Though, right?
No, the tanks, they don't have limited fuel. You can run out of ammo, but you roll back to your nearest resupply spot.
That's what I was thinking.
And the same is true with the aircraft to reload and also repair. So there is no way that I have found any way to repair a vehicle in Firestorm. You have limited gas and limited ammo. So that is the restrictor. And also, they maybe have become a little bit softer, although that might just be my perception from the limited amount of time I've been able to play. Yeah. A squad with anti-tank grenades and a handful of anti-tank weapons or even grenade launchers will take down a tank, I think, a little faster than the regular game. So a little more balanced. In fact,
That's what I was going to say. It seems like that's how they balanced it, mm-hmm. you know. Sure, you can get this super massive weapon, but you can't use it for very long. The game mode is not designed to last for very long. And of course, if the firestorm gets to the tank and you can't get out of the area, then mm-hmm. you've lost the tank. So at that point, it's like, well, do I go and get this thing?
Yeah, and how long do I want to hold it, right?
Yeah.
So I will say that in my best finish of this week, which was a third place finish, was a tank run for me. Now, I'm not as twitchy as some of the younger kids, so it is not a big surprise that I had a good finish in a tank, because that time to kill, time to death thing means that you're very vulnerable. The maps are very open because they're larger. It's really easy to see where the vehicles are, and it means that if someone's found a particularly good sniper rifle, you might be one shot killed. So those are things maybe I don't like, but it does make you a little more cautious. Yeah. But the best news, Dennis, is that the Battlefield 5 Firestorm is not a pay-for content edition. It is free for every version of Battlefield 5. So if you've been on the fence about Battlefield 5, or you can find a great sale on it, you're going to get a massive new map that's a very different playing experience. And your play in Firestorm does give you a positive effect in your campaign play and your regular squad play on every other version of Battlefield 5. So at the end of the day, maybe I'm not convinced it's for me, but it's definitely a cool change in the Battlefield experience.
Well, we heard from Darren talking about Battlefield 5 Firestorm, which actually sounds like a really fun addition to the Battlefield genre.
We'll have to get you into it.
Oh, no.
So what have you been playing?
I've been playing a bit of Far Cry 5.
Oh, now that's a kind of a big title that's a little bit older.
Yeah, it's about a year old or something like that. The funny thing is when I bought my Samsung NVMe for my new build, 6 months before I put the build together, I got a free copy of Far Cry 5.
Nice. And,
you know, I activated it. It went into my, I don't know, my Ubisoft thingy or whatever right. You play, I think is what they call it.
I always forget that one.
Yeah, and it stayed there. And I'm like, I totally forgot it was there. And then we were asking each other what we were going to play at the Boise LAN, and say, Far Cry 5 has a co-op mode. Let's do that. We like co-op games.
We do like co-op games. They're great for LAN parties.
They are. And unfortunately, with Far Cry 5, you have to play through like almost the first eighth of the game before it unlocks the multiplayer mode.
It felt like about an hour, which was kind of crazy, actually.
But that was also the trainer. That was how you learned how to play the game. You know, how the weapons work, where to go, where to get the cars. And it also set the story, because the story in every Far Cry game is really the driving force behind it.
Yeah, in fact, that was the biggest surprise to me, having never played one of the Far Cry games before, was the amount of story and cutscenes that appeared, especially during that first amount of play, the beginning of the game.
Yeah, well, it sets the tone. And that is that's one thing I love about Far Cry. You know, I played the original Far Cry a lot. I liked it. Supposedly, it didn't get well received, partially because of like the fact that the story wasn't really baked. they had these big plans for what they wanted to do with Far Cry, but the technology wasn't there to pull it all together. So now, fast forward, Far Cry 3 is following the same formula that I think works. I didn't make it through Far Cry 3 all the way, but Far Cry 5 is actually really fun. So when you drop into the game, if you haven't actually played it, you are a deputy. There's going to go in and arrest a cult leader. So kind of think take over Waco sort of thing, right?
Right.
And then things just kind of go sideways because now the, if you think about it from the ant mentality, it's like you're attacking the queen. So now the entire hive is after whoever's attacking the queen. So that's kind of what happened. And that sets the stage for how you get into the Far Cry 5 world. And at that point, you're running around trying to find weapons while getting away from the baddies who are actually all after you. And the formula is kind of fetch quests. So that part of it gets a little repetitive, and I think that's something that you had mentioned that...
Yeah, well, there were some assassination quests, but fetch quests, I mean, there's a lot of... To me, it's a little bit repetitive, especially for an open-world game. Although, to be fair, they all kind of get that way over time. And I didn't explore some of the alternative stuff like crafting and hunting, for example.
Yeah, so they added the crafting and hunting aspect to Far Cry 5, where it's another money... another way to get money. So you can go and fish, for instance. You get a fly rod or a fishing rod, and you can go to fishing hotspots and try to catch the largest fish. And then your name goes up on the leaderboard. It's your own leaderboard, but
okay.
You get to see, oh, hey, I caught a 200-foot sturgeon or something stupid.
Holy
like that.
Holy cow.
Right?
All right.
And I tried fishing once, and it's kind of a pain in the butt. But I caught like a 13-foot, or not 13-foot, 13-inch rainbow trout, which is, hey, that seems pretty good. And then I was moving on to the next thing. The crafting element is interesting. It's something that I haven't used a lot because of the fact that I loot all the bodies. So when I'm done with the firefight, I go around to everybody I killed and then grab things off of them. So I'll get ammunition, grenades, and proximity mines and stuff like that.
You've played this kind of game before.
I have. So you roll around and you grab all that stuff, and then I don't necessarily have to craft it. But if you run out of items like dynamite, you can go and craft some on the fly if you have some of those components. There's also a what I would call a herb drug sort of crafting side of things where you can build potions to go and run faster and regenerate health faster and stuff like that. So there's some of that as another way to... give you an extra edge in the game. The one part I do like that they've added to Far Cry 5 is the notion of a squad or teammates, which is also reinforced by the co-op nature of the multiplayer. So
you don't have to have other humans and you can still run more than one player.
Yes. When you complete certain areas, you can unlock that player to help you. So in the game that I've been playing, I liberated an aircraft hangar. I got this guy's plane back and stuff, and he got unlocked as a person that I can pull into my squad whenever I want. So if I'm in another area where I keep getting bombarded by trucks and I can't keep up, I can call this guy in on an airplane and he'll do these strafing runs and blow up all the trucks as they're coming in.
Oh, that's cool.
So that helps me manage areas while I have this other guy managing other areas. It's the same thing that if we were doing co-op, we just talk over chat where I say, hey, you go and watch the left, I'll watch the right, make sure that the bombs don't come in this way sort of thing.
So how good is the AI? Is it decent?
It is very decent. It works off of you spotting for it. But if you don't spot for it, it will go and find something for itself to do.
Okay.
So it's smart enough to know that it needs to do something, but it's also smart enough to know that, oh, I will do what you want me to do. And those controls are a little weird because you have to go and put on your binoculars, I think, and then say, I want you to go here, and then he'll go and take care of it.
Well, that kind of reminds me of the old Rainbow Six games.
Yeah, a little bit. It's from Ubisoft, isn't it?
Oh, it might be. That's a good question.
Yeah. So that sort of is kind of fun. And then they have some various levels of different missions that you can do. So the one that I waited until later in the game to come back to was destroying this convoy. So there is three trucks in a convoy that go around in predetermined paths. And these are basically, they have 50 cal machine guns on the back of them. We drove in one of those in my game.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So they have three of them in a row. And as you are coming around, if you just pass them, all three of them unload on you and it just blows up your car. And if you're sitting on the side of the road and they see you, then they'll actually unload on you. So you have to be a little creative in how you try to blow up the convoy. You can use like an RPG, or the way that I found that works well is you find where they're going on the path. You drop a proximity mine in the road and then a trigger mine like two car lengths back. So then when the convoy comes through, the proximity mine goes off and then you detonate the other one and you blow up all three trucks.
Oh, well, that's clever, but takes advantage of the pathing a little bit.
A little bit too much, really. But I did find that if you block the road, they will go around.
Oh, that's clever.
So you can't actually just get five cars and try to box them in because they will go and figure out another way to get around.
Yeah, I think that kind of highlights maybe one of the weak spots of the game for me in an effort to make the different maps, which are they all islands or just one island?
No, there was regions. So
yeah, the regions. Yeah.
So you had the three different regions that you, and each region had different missions that you'd have to go on.
And kind of different bad guys, which helped with the variety. Mm-hmm. But on the downside, it really felt like the populating the map meant that you had just predictable routes, that there would always be a truck or there would always be something.
Yeah.
And you would kill it and come back and it would be there again. And you would kill it and it would come back and be there again. Mm-hmm. Rinse and repeat. So initially, it was really exciting that the world had a lot going on, but then it got to be kind of predictable.
It did. I have gotten to the point where I'm just getting in a Camaro, because you have Camaros. They're not called Camaros in the game, but
oh, of course.
Get in an old 67 Camaro, and I'm just driving. So I know that I haven't been to this part of the map, but there's a road there, so I'm just driving along.
Oh, and
kind of having fun exploring, similar to what I did with Skyrim back in the day.
Yeah, and I think that sounds a lot like what I do in Fallout. You know, sometimes I just get on there and just go try to open up more waypoints on the map, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that is what they claim is the end game of Far Cry 5, because it does have a definite end, and supposedly there's three endings, which I didn't know about until later when I was looking it up. But you run into people, and they will give you little fetch quests to do all the time. So the game doesn't really end. It just keeps going and going and going. So you can play it indefinitely. However, the fun part of it probably ends.
Well, when the main story is over, I'm aware that you can purchase now the add-on, which is Far Cry 5 New Dawn.
Yeah, New Dawn. And actually, you can do your own maps. There's an arcade game where you can build your own maps to play.
Oh, that's kind of fun. A little sandbox, play with your friends.
Yeah, I haven't tried that one yet. But New Dawn is not necessarily an add-on. It is a continuation. So it's really a new game, but it's in the same region after the events of Far Cry 5.
Oh, well, that's kind of cool. So you can see the fallout from what happened.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Exactly.
Well, something we'll have to check out. So I'm guessing it sounds like you would recommend this.
I would assume that people who wanted to play Far Cry 5 already have. Mm-hmm. I'm just getting acquainted with it. And I would say that if you haven't bought it and you like that kind of game, it is definitely one to add to the list.
Well, this is one that I skipped initially, and the price has finally come down to where it was fun to try. I don't know that I would give it as strong a recommend, but I definitely felt like I got my money's worth out of it because there's so much to do, and I haven't even gotten past about 50%.
No, you haven't gotten past like 10%. There's a lot in this game.
See, and that's good to know because that means that there's a lot more content for my buck where I was lukewarm about it. Mm-hmm. It's more game than I originally anticipated.
Yeah, well, like what we did with Dying Light, we'll just have to plan some time to get together and do co-op. At the time of this recording of our podcast, Extra, PAX is going on.
Oh, yeah.
And at PAX, there's always a game release from Gearbox and other game developers. I mean, it's a gaming conference.
Yeah, a lot of hot releases. Good news comes out of it every year.
And there was one release that came out on the first day, and it generally got me excited.
Oh, do tell.
Borderlands 3.
Oh, yeah, I saw this out there, yeah.
So the funny thing about Borderlands is that early on in the Hardware Asylum podcast, which when it was the Ninja Lane podcast, we had like 6 episodes dedicated to Borderlands 2.
Oh, we played the heck out of that game and still do occasionally revisit it.
Yeah, and it was a fun game. It really changed it changed my take on looter shooters. I was never really into the whole looter shooter. At the time I was playing Skyrim a lot, and that was kind of it wasn't really a multiplayer game, but you got to go and explore and build stuff, and it was really fetch quests.
And really, really great natural co-op game.
Exactly. Well, Borderlands natural co-op game.
Oh, yeah.
Skyrim is not.
Well, that's true.
Yeah. It's been something like 7 years since Borderlands 2 was first released. But it doesn't seem like it's that long because they kept releasing add-ons. You know, we had like Krieg, and we had Gage, and then there was the DLC add-ons like the Sir Hammerlocks. And then we also had the Tiny Tina's Attack on Dragon's Keep, which actually was really good. And then, the Captain Scarlet.
Oh, yeah. I love that one. Pretty iconic characters were introduced.
Yep, of
course.
Very
cool. In that crazy Borderlands sort of off-kilter comedy.
Yeah, that was fun. And then we also had the Borderlands 2 that we don't talk about, which is the pre-sequel.
Oh, yeah.
And then add-ons for that.
Yeah, could have been worse.
And then we had Tales from the Borderlands. The thing with the pre-sequel and Tales from Borderlands is they were done by different game companies.
Yeah, at least Tales from the Borderlands, you kind of knew what to expect because it came from Telltale Games, and they are famous for their point-and-click adventures, and they also have a similar quirky sense of storytelling. So a natural fit, but definitely a different style of gaming that I just don't enjoy.
Right. But the thing is, the story from Tales from Borderlands got carried over to Borderlands 3.
Very cool for the fans of that. And I heard there were some pretty iconic characters introduced in that series as well.
Yeah, we had Reese. We saw him in the Borderlands 3 reveal trailer. We also saw Claptrap, obviously. It's going to be Claptrap. There was a character that was absent, which was Scooter.
Oh, I didn't catch that, but you're right.
Yeah, Scooter was not in there. We saw a much older Tiny Tina, which is something we speculated about when we were talking about Borderlands 2.
Yes, we did. Very popular character. I hope they don't ruin her.
I hope so as well. But based off of some of the, there was a pre-reveal trailer that showed Tiny Tina, and she looked like a teenager at that point. So obviously some time has passed, and they've aged all the characters, which is really a good move, I believe.
As long as they don't take us back to space too much, I suppose it'll be okay.
Yeah. Speaking of, there is, in the reveal trailer, there is multiple worlds that you can go to. And I think there were 6 of them. One of them looked like a forest, like a jungle forest. And then we had another one that looked like a big city, similar to when you were going to, I can't remember it now, but Captain Jack's City in Borderlands 2.
Oh, right.
I want to call it the Outback, but it wasn't the Outback at all. I'm going to have to go play it again.
I forgot.
But then we had a couple of other Pandora-looking places. I suspect that it's mostly going to be on Pandora, though. You'll probably go to one of those Outlands as part of a mission and then come back.
Well, it's a great opportunity for them to address DLC by adding new areas that way as well.
That is very true. The one part in the trailer that I really liked was the Vault Key made its way back, and it didn't seem to be dangerous. Whereas, when Handsome Jack had a hold of the key, he was charging it up so that he could release the warrior. Spoilers.
Oh, yeah. Danger.
And when the new Vault Hunters, because there's 4 new Vault Hunters now, I forget their names, but they were all hanging around the Vault Key, and it didn't look like it was all charged with iridium, which was pretty crazy. And we also saw Lilith in what looks like a withdrawal mode. So she's...
That makes sense. So some tie-ins to the previous characters.
Yeah. They're all coming back, which is really the cool thing about Borderlands. I mean, you could go all the way back to the original Borderlands, see characters that get carried on to Borderlands 2, and then somewhat into the pre-sequel, which is, we don't talk about, and then Borderlands 3.
Well, it's definitely getting to be a rich world. I'm excited to see what the new characters bring. And they have had traditionally some of the most fun character reveals really ever as they've released some of this new content. So I'm thinking that we'll see more of that before the game comes out.
Well, I would hope so. By the time that you are listening to this podcast extra, the second trailer for Borderlands 3 would have already been released. Hopefully the game hasn't been released yet. There's a rumor that there is a high quality version of the original Borderlands with new models and textures and everything that will be available on Steam, which I'm really excited for. I didn't get a lot of playtime in the original Borderlands. I have like 700 hours in Borderlands 2.
To be fair, I beat that one also, but I think that was probably the first game that I ever beat on the PlayStation and then rebought on the PC.
That is a pretty good recommend, really.
It is a fantastic game that still holds up if you like that style of graphics, which is the cel-shaded style that they really popularized. They may not have been first, but they're definitely the biggest title to use that style.
Oh, hey, here's a little bit of trivia, though. Do you happen to know why they went with the cel shading on Borderlands?
I do not.
The rumor is when that game was being released, there was also Rage and Fallout.
Oh, yeah.
And they all were following a very similar genre of this post-apocalyptic Outland sort of Badlands thing.
Okay, I see the tie-in.
So now, instead of actually making it look realistic to make it stand out, they went with the cel shading. And it supposedly has changed the way that we have interpreted those style of games.
And that is true. Now you see a lot of AAA titles with interesting graphics. I mean, Team Fortress 2, for example, very popular. And I'm sure that's just the tip of the iceberg. And a lot of these games, serious gamers overlooked initially because the graphics looked like cartoons. And that is no longer the case, which is good for everyone.
It's super good.
I think it's safe to say that we're both looking forward to this game and more information to come. But if there's any indication, we'll probably be putting hundreds of hours into it. So take a look.
For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes on hardwareasylum.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware Asylum by subscribing to our RSS. Follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook. This has been a Ninja Lane production, copyright 2019. Thanks for listening.